A few seconds. Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode of Ready Row USA. We are a podcast associated with Rowing Chat, the well-known rowing podcast, and we're branching out into new global areas. So we're the USA contingent. I'm Charlotte Pierce, and I'm an independent publisher, master sculler of about 6 years, and a member of Community Rowing in Boston. And I'm a self-confessed rowing news addict. You know, hopefully it will eventually pay off in my rowing. We'll see. But anyway, today I have the honor of hosting Mark Wilson, who's a co-director with Jim Dietz of the All-American Rowing Camp in DeLand, Florida. And he'll be speaking at the upcoming U.S. Rowing Convention, Masters Track. And he is well known as someone who enjoys messing about in boats. And that's his hashtag, messing about in boats. So if you type that into Twitter, you will find Mark's tweets. And we have Ellen Minsner. Is that correct, Minsner? She's with Community Rowing in Boston as Director of Inclusion and Advocacy, and she's a U.S. para rowing coach, and I have to say, an all-around awesome person. I see her regularly at Community Rowing, and it's always great to be around these fantastic people. I have gone to Mark's rowing camp as well, and you know, it's progress, not perfection, I guess. But Mark and Ellen, welcome. Yeah,
thanks for the great intro. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you as well. I'm looking forward to our discussions and what people have to say.
Yeah, and we're going to keep on going with this podcast, I think. So please, if you're listening along, go to the description below and enter your email, and we can keep you informed about the podcast. What we wanted to cover today, there's so many things we could cover, and we're probably going to run way over time, but the U.S. Rowing Convention is coming up, and Mark will be speaking at that as in the Masters Track, as I mentioned. And then Mark is also, and Ellen have tuned into the current trend and enthusiasm around coastal rowing. So we're going to try and touch on that. And then Ellen has a lot of good news about women's and para rowing. So that's kind of her specialty in this session. But Mark, could you give us a little preview of what's going on at the rowing convention and you know, what you'll be speaking about and some exciting sessions that people might want to take in?
Absolutely, Charlotte. Thanks for asking. The U.S. Rowing Convention is an annual event. It's happening this year in San Diego, California. It's happening this coming week. So this topic is appropriate. U.S. Rowing Convention itself is really a group of conferences. So what U.S. Rowing is trying to do, and doing it quite well, I believe, is to encourage not just collegiate coaches or not just coaches in general, but also all sorts of different rowers and people with different interests to come to the conference itself or the convention. So within the convention, there's the Advanced Coaches Conference, which has speakers such as Mike Tatey and Tom Terhar and many other nationally recognized and international coaches. Also the CRCA, which is the Collegiate Rowing Coaches Association, has their conference, their annual meeting in place at that time frame. Level 2 coaches development is going on as well. And then Business of Rowing 2.0, which is the second installment of the Business of Rowing, which really encompasses a great deal from the sport. That has to do with how to run a club, how to run a regatta, insurance, the business behind rowing. So that's a very big topic itself.
And so are they trying to get, I'm sorry, just a question about, are they trying to get more like just regular rowers to come to the convention, or is this for people who are more in like coaches and administrators and program directors?
Yeah, those topics are really, I think, designed for more of the business side of people, you know, the executives or the people that are running the clubs and the college programs. But then they also have a referees program, which is really important to try to get more rowers to become referees. So that's a big push for U.S. rowing right now. And then also the junior day, which is an opportunity for juniors from around the region. And typically those those athletes will be coming in just from the California or Arizona or typical area. And then the master's track as well. So there's a lot of opportunity for your average rower to come in and learn a great deal about what's going on.
And I noticed they also have that session about melanoma, which is like something that kind of came into my awareness this year.
Sure. Within each one of those different topics, there's probably 5 to 6 to 8 different presentations that are going on. So there's a lot of information that's going to be pushed through the weekend.
And what's going on with, like, I mean, I don't know how much you know about the composition of the board or initiatives that they're putting forward, like in para rowing or juniors, or, you know, like what are the initiatives?
There are some board members that will be being removed or they've termed out basically of their opportunity to be on the board. So the new board members will be coming on. I don't know who those people are right now. I don't know if that's been made public or not. But I think the whole overarching emphasis is to try to continue to increase the opportunity for people of all different abilities and interests to join the sport of rowing in various ways. So that's where the inclusion efforts are quite strong.
Where do you see kids? Do you see a lot of? Do you see a lot of kids getting involved and interested in the sport, or is that waning? Or
like personally, it has never been greater. I think the amount of rowing that has youth oriented is just booming all over the country. It's amazing as I travel throughout the country all year long. You know, people say, "Oh, I never knew rowing was there," and it's like rowing is everywhere. So, and there are kids getting involved. And then the great thing is, as the kids get involved, then so often their parents get involved because of that. And then that just adds to the next.
Yeah, I see that all the time in the masters. Sure. You know, they're all parents that come do sculling. Now, Ellen, do you have any you know, perspective on?
Yeah, sure.
On some of those things.
I think a couple of things, you know, youth rowing, it's definitely not going anywhere. It's growing in leaps and bounds, even though it still is somewhat under the radar. One event that we held recently at Community Rowing, which we've held every year for the past few years now, is a youth-only sculling event. The head of the queue, I'm not going to try and pronounce it properly over this podcast, but yes. But the exciting thing about that is, you know, they start as young as, I think, 13 years old, all singles. So it's really to promote youth sculling. We went from a handful of entries a few years ago to a few hundred this year, including a blind athlete. And I think that as we think about the sport for all, this is where we really get into the access issues. And so to incorporate with very little major accommodation, to be able to accommodate an athlete with a disability who wanted to compete in the singles race at the head of the queue, it was just fantastic, incident-free, and that's really what it is. It's not about creating every specific Paralympic category. It's about reasonable accommodation, and that's actually a buzzword in the disability field in general. Can the athlete be reasonably accommodated? And in our case, this athlete was visually impaired. She rode with a guide rower with a very exciting device. I don't have the details on that device, but these are the kinds of things. Of course, a reasonable accommodation. She had a coach or a teammate in a single alongside her guiding the steering, much as a blind athlete might need a guide runner for a track and field event. So really creative ways. And this is what I think is the most exciting part about para rowing, is we're starting to see some creativity beyond the four Paralympic events to get people involved. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm going to try maybe do some of the inclusion is like when you have able-bodied and a para mixed in a boat.
Yep.
You know, I feel like the para rowing at Community Rowing has just enhanced my experience there so much. just for because sure. you know, for you see them going out and just giving it their all. And
yeah.
you sure. know, if I'm little 62-year-old woman, if I can do, you know, if they can do it, I can do it.
Well, what I like about inclusion is it makes people part of a team. You know, we really sometimes think about the athlete with a disability needs so much specialization in terms of their equipment that it's impossible to, you know, do anything except create separate tracks for them. But the truth of it is, you know, a big percentage of people need minimal accommodation, and with a little creativity, it can actually be fun for a person who rows with a fixed seat to row with somebody who does not. It's complicated, but possible and very fun, because in this way, they can actually be included in team rowing instead of constantly relegated to just rowing only with people with their category. And that's what I like about it.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. And then are there other clubs like community rowing with that level of para involvement and infrastructure?
There are a number of clubs trying to onboard para rowing. Some have been around for quite some time. The most exciting thing, though, is that the regatta scene has come on board. So the folks have been working with people with disabilities, have been doing that for several years and running their programs based on their own lesson learned. But the acceptance of the regatta community is very encouraging. Only a few years ago, the head of the Charles had a lot of questions about how they might move forward. And now we have international crews in the inclusion events, and they're being added to things like the Massachusetts State Public Championships. The inclusion thing is a lot of fun.
That is just fantastic. Yeah, well, let's keep that as one of our topics on this podcast, because it just seems like there's so much happening. But I also wanted to cover, and Para is probably involved in this too, but coastal rowing. Mark is kind of raised my awareness about that, and I think you have a boat down there at the All-American Rowing Camp, don't you? A coastal boat?
We do
you can
actually
take your dog in it or something.
You can take a cooler in it, which a lot of people find really beneficial to it. So
the coastal event
and the coastal category is a big push for FISA right now around the world. It's really blossoming in Africa and parts of Asia, as well as where it's really the forestay of it is in Middle Europe. Italy, France, Great Britain, Ireland, really are very strong teams. The last world championships were in Victoria, British Columbia, and the actual number of athletes were down a little bit in 2018 over the 2017, but I think that was mostly due to the location. So in 2017, there were 269 boats with over 600 athletes involved in the championships, which is the world championships. And last year, it was down to about almost 500. So about 140 people down. But again, I think that was because North America is a growth scene. And so I think that's one of the big pushes for U.S. rowing right now is to try to get more coastal involvement, because it is a FISA.
I remember hearing about Jim at the rowing camp. Didn't he do a big coastal?
He's done the Blackburn Challenge. And there's a lot of these other events that are not typically or not really FISA sanctioned or even U.S. rowing sanctioned, but there's a lot of events that have a lot of history around the country. So the Blackburn Challenge is one of those, which is a coastal event. And there should be a lot more of those kind of things out and about. And I think that's exciting. The nice thing about coastal rowing is that it doesn't take quite as much true technical prowess to become quite good at it. The boats are a little more stable. They're a little heavier, so you're feeling a little bit more about what the boats have to give. But the oars are exactly the same. The sliding seat, the rowing motion is the same. But it can be taught in a boat that's a little wider and a little bit more forgiving.
And what are some of the clubs around the country, or I'm sorry, the around the U.S. that are like?
That's a great question.
I guess it would be the coasts, but.
Yeah, well, typically coastal rowing, you think of it as being on the coast, but also it can be on any rough water or flat water as well. You're in just a little bit more stable boat. That's the question, is which clubs are going to take the coastal initiative and kind of open it up to their members, or just, you know, to people who want to get involved in the sport. Most right. of the coastal rowing that I have seen is more on the individual basis, and I'm sure it's going to be growing.
I know I'd heard about one. I think it was in Prince Edward Island or something like that. It was over the summer. I really wanted to go up there. But
I think a lot of the Canadian, I think it's more developed a little bit more in Canada than it is here in the United States.
Ellen, have you caught wind of any cool news on that score?
Well, what I like about coastal rowing is a little bit more to the equipment, because I'm all about where the intersection between the athletes with the disabilities and those without disabilities can come. And I think, as Mark mentioned, the equipment is slightly more forgiving. So we have a variety of athletes who are not necessarily fit the exact Paralympic category, but who need a lot of things, balance being one of them, a stroke-affected person, people with asymmetries, etc. They may not want to be competing in a Paralympic event, but who wouldn't want to go out and row with their friends? I think the coastal rowing has a lot to offer, just in terms of how many different types of people the boats themselves can accommodate. And I think that what we do at Community Rowing, we do try and push forward the competitive categories, but the more accessible in general you make the sport, the more people with disabilities we're going to see come out for the sport. And accessible can mean anything.
And who's making those? I'm sorry, who's you're ready to say that probably? Who's making those? Resolute?
Resolute is focusing on the competitive design whereby a fixed seat could go on a standard Olympic style racing hull. So that's one side of the track that we're really looking forward to as well. But the other side is, you know, there are boat builders. I think there's a rep down in Connecticut, and you would know, Mark, about there are several that make the coastal rowing hull.
The coastal hulls are really is a class, and I think that's one thing that people need to understand. Just like a racing single is a class of boat,
correct,
the coastal single is also a class. So Swift makes the coastal boat. Felipe makes a coastal boat. There are Abbey Row out of Sweden, Leo out of Sweden makes a coastal boat. There's many manufacturers of the actual hull, but they all have, it's a class, so they have to be a certain weight and they can't be certain too long. So there's dimensions that they're all have to conform.
So if someone like watches this or listens to this podcast and is all on fire about it, will you be running one out of the rowing camp or down there in Florida anywhere?
Well, we have one coastal single here, and I've spread a bunch of them out, and we're hoping to get another one from Swift here as well.
Okay.
But I think the thing that people are interested in coastal rowing, one of the other advantages is the boats themselves are less expensive. They're heavier.
Oh, really? I was wondering.
Quite a bit, about half the cost, or maybe even a third, depending on the quality of the racing single that you might look at. So you can get into the sport relatively without a lot of resources, and that's a benefit to the clubs, as Ellen was mentioning too. Mm-hmm. So a club could buy several coastal boats, and then they're, as I said, they're a class, so you know it's really one size fits all.
Yeah. So it might be a good option for down in the basin in Boston, right?
Yeah. I think a Union Boat Club could use a couple.
Right. Man, that gets rough. Yeah. Oh my God. It wasn't so bad at the head of the Charles, though. It was just kind of like, it was at least when I rode it later in the day, it was bad. But, well, let's move on to some of the news and women's and para. I know they're trying to, there's some change in the Olympic.
That's really exciting. It was only in 2016 that I realized some of the disparities in between how the Olympic and the Paralympic teams are funded. Of course, we know there's some differences, but in Rio, if you won a gold medal in the Olympics, in any sport, not just rowing, since it's a USOC, you would win $25,000. And if you won a gold medal in any sport in a Paralympic event, you would win five. I thought, well, that doesn't seem to be exactly right.
Uh-huh.
So I started looking at the issue with some folks that care about it here in Boston, and actually was told that it would change never in my lifetime. And so
literally, that's what they said, right?
What they said. And I said, well, we'll see. And I do think it's the right message, because we can't be out there inspiring and working hard and having all the same restrictions and obligations when we aren't really funded the same way. And finally, we got to some of the right people. I can't take credit for the messaging and how it got all the way up to the top, but we have some great contacts here in the Boston area. Sherry Blowett is over at Spalding, and she's on the committee, and she's been a fantastic advocate. And lo and behold, it changed about a month ago. In fact, they're actually retroactively covering the Winter Olympics. So not so far back as the 2016 Summer Olympics, but going back to the 2018 Winter Olympics. And moving forward into Tokyo, everyone will not only be equal, there was an increase. I don't know the exact amount right now, but we will all be equal. A gold medal will be a gold medal, a silver, and a bronze. So it's been tremendously empowering for the athletes to be recognized in that way.
That's so cool. Keep us posted about that. And also, you had mentioned something about Grace, Grit, and Glory. Are you involved in that?
Oh, sure.
I just wanted to cover that because it's coming up in January.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's a bit of a offshoot of our program for Girls Row Boston, a program for girls in the public schools of Boston, which now has grown, and we now have a boys corollary, et cetera. But with so many wonderful women rowers in the Boston community, Olympians who have helped that program, we decided to create an event and call it Grace, Grit, and Glory. And it was to highlight the achievements of the kids who are graduating out of the Inner City Girls program, as well as all the Olympians who have supported it with equipment, coaching, and even funding over the years. So it's become a fantastic event. And we typically highlight some keynote speakers, and this year we actually are giving an award to somebody we consider a trailblazer in the community that's benefited either the sport of rowing or her community or both. And we are announcing that it's going to be Mary Mazzio this year. She will receive the first. She's a Olympic rower / lawyer turned documentary filmmaker, and her films have always had a bit of a social conscious message to them. But this one really hit home in a lot of areas. Her most recent one is called I Am Jane Doe. I think it's still screening across the country and even internationally. And it is about closing the legal loopholes that enable online human sex trafficking. So we're really, really thrilled that she's able to be there, and what tremendous work. I'm really proud of that.
I really want to go this year.
I
got tickets last year, but I wasn't able to go.
January
26th. Okay.
Yeah. And the Facebook page is Grace, Grit, and Glory, and the event and the tickets are available online.
Great. Mark, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up about burning questions and news?
I just want to say I'm really excited about being here, and I think that these kind of venues, these kind of opportunities for people to kind of learn a little bit and getting the word out about rowing, is the rowing sport and the rowing people and the rowing community is such an open, vibrant group of folks, and it's bigger than most people think. And I think that one of the things that I like to see and would like to see this type of venue encourage is the everyday rower who may not be involved with a club, who may not have a coach alongside of them, but because it has an opportunity to learn more about the sport and how they can be, if they choose, to become more involved. If you think about the sport of running, there are millions of people out there just running up and down the street. And unfortunately, rowing doesn't have millions of people that are just rowing out in the water, but there's an awful lot of people out there that are not affiliated with any certain organization.
I have my boat in my yard.
Right?
My neighbors walk by and say, how much does that thing weigh? And I see these people on the Charles River all the time, and it looks so beautiful.
I've got 14 boats in my containers in my garage. So I've got my boats, and I go out and use them a lot. And I say hi to people, and I think that's the neat thing. And I hope that we can get some traction with this little podcast. And
well, definitely. If you guys are willing to come on from time to time, and how do people reach you? Mark@allamericanrowingcamp.com, right?
That's us, yeah.
Okay.
And people can reach me at ellen@communityrowing.org, or they can find out about Grace, Grit, and Glory on the Grace, Grit, and Glory Facebook page. And I also run a website for all things Row Inclusive. So you can find Row Inclusive on Facebook and connect with other people who are trying to get involved.
Awesome. Yeah, I know when I go traveling, I mean, this is about U.S. rowing, but I just call these rowing clubs and say,
"That's great.
Can I?" It's just like I've rowed in Amsterdam and Scotland and London, and it's just a fabulous global community. So it's great. Well, thank you so much. And I just wanted to mention that we're calling ourselves Ready Row USA. So I hope that name will stick. And we're part of the Rowing Chat Network, formerly owned by Row Perfect UK. And look down in the description below the podcast, and you'll see the contact information about how to get on the mailing list. And in upcoming shows, right, hopefully we'll have Mark back and maybe someone else, if you can snag someone from the kind of recap what happened at U.S. Rowing Convention. And we're also going to be talking with some of the engineers in the amazing busy workshop at Community Rowing, which is often repairs a lot of the mishaps from the head of the churl. I just love their stories. They're so great. Yeah. Anyway, we'll get some news on equipment about repairs and developments and that. And thank you both very much for coming. This is just so fun.
Yes, absolutely.
It's fun to connect with you. So
great. Thank you. You too.
Sign off. Thank you so much.